Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It's episode number 86 for Thursday, February 2nd, 2012. I am your Phil Nickinson. I am everybody's Phil Nickinson. I am the Phil Nickinson, your host for this podcast. Doing it at a different time this week because we have a special guest on from England. We have Paul O'Brien from Motico. Paul?
Hi, guys.
Thanks for joining us, man. I was kind of gushing a little bit in the pre-show. I mean, Motico is just, you know, old school site for anybody in mobile. And, you know, I first started going when I got my very first Windows mobile phone and looking to, you know, hard SPL the thing and all that good stuff. So thank you for coming on, man. Thrilled.
No worries. Good to be here.
And also from England, we have Alex Dobie.
Hello and good evening at the early time of 9 p.m.
I know, man. It's not 2 a.m. You happy about that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's you look dark, more sober cold, this week, Al.
Hey, I'm always sober on the podcast. I don't know what you're talking about, Jerry.
And from the mountains of West Virginia, we have Jerry Hildenbrand.
Yeehaw, everybody.
That's it? That's all we get?
That's all you get. Heck, I'm ready to jump right in.
So I'm expecting we're going to have just a huge nerd out because, I mean, Paul's been, you know, doing ROMs forever. You know, Jerry knows Android, and I just kind of stand here and talk and wave around and stuff. So I really, really want to hear you guys kind of get into it this week. Let's just jump to it. As I was putting the notes together, there was so much stuff, and we've had more news come out since then. I want to talk about Google privacy a little more. Not a whole lot, but Microsoft came out this week and has taken out some full-page ads basically saying, you know, Google's evil, and they're out to get you, and they just want to make money, and that's bad because we're Microsoft and we don't want to make money off you at all. No, that's it. And it's pretty much BS. And Google came out and did a blog post, you know, refuting a lot of these points. And that's just 2 days after Google responded to Congress, and U.S. Congress had a bunch of questions. And Google laid it all out, and most of the answers were, we're not collecting any new information. You need to calm the hell down. And is it going to calm down Congress? I don't know. Probably not. I was pretty satisfied with what I read. I don't know about you guys. Has anyone actually gone through and read the new privacy policy yet?
Well, from what I see with what's been written so far, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot particularly changing. I mean, if anyone kind of thinks that Google aren't already sharing all the information about them around internally, you know, they're kind of kidding themselves. So, you know, we see Google forming ads based on what's going on elsewhere in our Google account. And, you know, I don't think that's particularly going to change. If anything, as a Google consumer, bearing in mind that I've kind of, like a lot of Android users, I've kind of bought into every single Google service, you know, it might actually turn out to be a good thing if they can improve that sharing and improve the information that's kind of tailored to me. So, you know,
I don't have a problem with that. I think it's a very convenient bandwagon to jump on, but I really don't think there's anything particularly nefarious on the end of the day. And let's not forget that they could have been a lot less transparent with the way they switched over to this new privacy policy. It's Google themselves that have been going out there and making all this very, very public.
In a lot of ways, they're actually making it too clear, aren't they? Everywhere you go on Google now, you get a little box pop up, you know, privacy policy.
Yeah, changing.
Like, you need a box that says, yes, I really do understand it. Please go away.
Well, I don't understand the uproar. They took 60 documents, condensed it into one, made it much easier to read, and
wrote it in English.
Put it out there for everybody to see, and told us a month in advance they were going to do it.
It's different.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. People need to just calm down. That's what it is. And you know what else they need to do? They need to read the damn privacy policy, all right? We did a poll. Was it yesterday, the day before? 4,500 responses. 79.78% of the people who responded have not read the new privacy policy. You don't get to bitch. I'm sorry. You just don't. No, I'm not sorry. You don't get to bitch about it. You have to go read it. Jerry and I have been talking about this a lot lately, and on one hand, yes, you absolutely need to know what you're working with. I think app developers, OS developers need to be transparent about it. But at the same time, the moment you pick up the phone, you have an inherent responsibility to know what it is you're working with and to not just stick your head in the sand and, I didn't know, I didn't read it. You have a responsibility to do so. And I know people don't like it when we preach, but that's important. And you don't get to say, you know, everything in life does not need an easy button. Everything should not have a little on-off toggle switch. You should not have to opt out of everything. It's like saying I want to use Gmail but not Google. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
I think this is kind of representative of a lot of people's general behavior. You know, when you talk about Android security and all these kind of apps that are scraping your contact list and emailing premium rate numbers, you know, a lot of the apps that are doing these things actually tell you that they're doing that in the privileges. But, you know, a vast majority of people aren't reading what they're installing or aren't really bothered about kind of the fine details. They just want to do stuff as fast as possible. So I think it's the same sort of thing, really.
Why does this email app need to know my contacts? Or, you know, really, really? Real. I mean, just think about it. That's my thing. So I don't know. I mean, is it going to get better? Yeah. I think this is a really short-term problem. I think Google did a good job responding to it. I'm sorry they had to, but I'm glad they did. You know, you can't just let them sit back and bash at you and bash at you. And good for Google to coming back and explaining it. And if you've ever, you know, if you've ever read Google's responses to this stuff before, and it was a lot like the responses that the carriers gave Al Franken over the carrier IQ thing. But, I mean, it makes sense. And it's, if you've ever listened to somebody try to attack Eric Schmidt, which is just hilarious. It's entertaining to watch because he'll just totally turn the argument around on you. And it's very much the same thing. I mean, just the congressmen and Microsoft come in with the agenda, I think. And it's so just it's transparent what they're doing. It's horrible. And, you know, it's a waste of time. I'm upset. I need a minute.
I'm not going to say it's a waste of time. It's something that everybody should discuss. I mean, Paul hit it right on the head. We do a lot of this stuff, and people don't ever bother to read what it's going to do. They just click and then cry later. But I don't see why people came in with a preconceived notion that it's bad. That's the part that I don't understand.
That which part is bad? That the new
the new consolidated privacy policy is automatically evil.
Yeah, well, I think there's a general cynicism, isn't there, that if a big corporation is going to do something, it's going to be detrimental to you in some way.
And that's what makes it all the more hilarious when you have companies like Microsoft coming out and saying, oh, look how evil Google is.
It's like it was at Mobile World Congress last year, the year before, at Eric Schmidt's keynote, and they did a Q&A afterwards, and somebody, you know, said, hey, Google just released their earnings. It was $2 billion or whatever. And, you know, and I know I've said this before, and dude asked Eric Schmidt, when is enough? Is that enough money? Have you made enough money yet? And he's like, wait a minute. Hang on here. You're telling me that I should ignore my duty as a CEO? You know, I am legally beholden to make money for this company, and I shouldn't do that? Oh, well, you know, it's like just, it really just rubs me the wrong way when people are dumb. That's my thing. Go read the privacy policy. You really should. And it makes sense, and it's simple, and they're not doing anything new. That's my thing. On to more evil news. It's going to be a very evil podcast, I think. We should have worn evil hats or something, or trench coats, I don't know. Over the weekend, was it Friday, Jerry? Semantic wrote a blog post, and it got picked up in one of the initial...
Yeah. You know,
the post said, there's all this scary malware and all these apps, and here are the apps, and go take a look at them. And then a publication, I won't say who it is, because I think they've been bashed enough for it, Computer World, had in the headline that it could have been 5 million, you know, 5 million applicants, you know, 5 million people could be infected. And Jerry, you took a look at it. Are 5 million people infected?
I guess possibly, but it's also possible that 10,000 people are infected.
Well, let's back up. Let's explain exactly what it is. And competing security company Lookout came out very quickly, and we've talked about Lookout before. You know, came out pretty quickly and said, "Oh, hang on a minute. It's not necessarily malware, right?" And
right,
it's actually
right.
An advertising SDK. That's. I'm not going to go so far to say it's, you know, not nefarious.
Cause it's crap. I'll say it. It's crap, but it's accepted crap.
Yeah, it's not malware, and Google has said, you know, this falls within the realm of what you're allowed to do. It's not good,
and frankly, it's not doing any. It's not malware in the sense that it's exploiting anything. It's doing things that it has permission to do that you gave it permission to do.
Right. And once again, back to what Paul said, we all agreed to it when we installed it.
I'm going to stay the hell away from any developer that uses it.
Yep.
I mean, there should be a huge ass warning label that says, "Hey, we use this crappy ad service." But, you know, vote with your wallet, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, is it AirPush, the SDK that puts ads in your notification bar. Mm-hmm. You know, again, you know, that's pretty unpleasant crapware, I suppose, but you vote with your feet, and if you've got install an app that's got it, you uninstall it, and, you know, it's not malicious, it's just not very nice, and, you know, if you don't want it, get rid of it. It's not doing anything you haven't given it permission to do, though.
Hmm.
So that's kind of interesting timing that Google came out right before we started recording this podcast and announced that it's been using this bouncer service. Jerry, can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, it's a server-side scanner, and you know, we haven't had a lot of time to look at it, but from what we see so far, it supposedly scans every application in the market, including new ones as they're uploaded. It scans all developers' account to match the developer accounts to match them against accounts that have been kicked off for doing things they shouldn't be doing. And it scans them against known malware and Trojans and viruses and whatnot. And it also scans the code to see if they're doing any, you know, illicit activity that may not be recognized yet as malware. It's, you know, it sounds like exactly what we need. It's the open model, upload what you want. But if you try to do something stupid, we're going to catch you and we're going to block it from the market and throw you out. A really interesting thing is the numbers that Google has of applications downloaded from the market that may be considered malicious are very, very different than the numbers we see plastered across the internet about malware is on the rise. Mm-hmm. So I encourage everybody to... It's on our front page, and we link back to Google Mobile Blog. Everybody should read this one.
Here's my question, and I don't think they answered it. For developers, is this going to slow down the time it takes an app to get into the market? And it's been a long time since I've uploaded anything to the market, and it was instantaneous then.
They don't mention that it's going to slow the process down any. I don't know.
I would imagine that it works the same. This is a complete guess, but I would imagine that it works the same way as a virus scanner. You look at all the complex heuristics that does in the background, mm-hmm. and whenever you run anything, and you still don't really notice with a modern virus scanner any kind of slowdown. So I guess with all the computing power Google has at its disposal, that this would, you know, it would be a matter of seconds really to scan whatever you submit.
In the TechCrunch article, they actually say the bouncer scanning process only takes seconds, so there's no noticeable change to the experience as a developer. So.
There you go.
Yeah, an interesting angle on this is, bearing in mind that Google is scanning all your applications, assuming that you're only installing from legitimate sources like Android Market, does it mean we don't need to install Lookout or Avast any of those things?
I would argue that you don't need to do that anyway, but that's just me.
Well, the thing is, if there's an app out there and it is doing something malicious and it is exploiting something, you know, hopefully that will then go into the Avast database or the Lookout database, and it will flag up that is on your device and that you want to deal with it. So, as much as it's kind of looking for something now. There in the future, it might be a nice thing to have on. I mean, it's a never-ending debate, isn't it? Do you need antivirus software?
And let's not forget, Google has the ability to remove apps from your device if they're found to be malicious. They can do that remotely, and they've done that in the past.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many of us enthusiasts, though, only install stuff from the Android market. And then, you know, that's added level of danger, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I think it's interesting that the more nerdy guys on this podcast, that would be Jerry and Paul, I think. I mean, Alex is pretty nerdy. But I mean, it sounds like, Paul, that you use antivirus. I know that Jerry does. I don't.
Yep.
I probably should, but I don't.
I didn't until recently, actually. It's only since Avast came out I've started using that. And, you know, because that has a lot of extra baked-in free features that are pretty nice, like anti-theft and all that sort of stuff, it's kind of a bit of a no-brainer for me, really.
Yeah, we do think that's a lot, like what to use, and we kind of hesitate to really, you know, say, well, this one's better than the other, because so many of them have the same features or slightly, you know, and it's tough. I mean, I can't say with any real certainty this one's going to catch, you know, malware better than this one. I just don't have a feel for that. I mean, you know, Jerry and Paul, are we kind of on the right track by not really recommending one, but saying check them all out?
If I was going to install a product and couldn't really compare how effective they were, what I generally do in any other kind of market is I would install something from a reputable brand. So for me, that sort of same sort of thing applies to Android. You know, if you install AVG or Avast or someone that's got a good reputation in the PC industry, you'd hope that that would kind of translate to Android as well.
Well, what I did was there's some examples out there of malicious code you can stick in your app. Mm-hmm. I just whipped up a little clock, a world clock, and stuck that code in it. All the ones available caught it.
Okay.
So as far as detecting the malware, I think they're all okay. It's a like Paul said, you go with who you trust and based on the other features as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and there's a lot to be said for general security, like theft protection, protecting your data if you your phone's lost or stolen as well, not just...
And that's really what I'm more worried about. Yeah, that's really why I should use it. And all right, I'm going to try it again this afternoon. Damn it. I want to talk about something else, and I've seen Paul going back and forth on this a little bit this week, and Jerry and I have talked about it too. So Coach released his Clockwork Mod Touch Recovery this week, and if you haven't seen it, we did a video of it. There have been other examples. It's custom recovery that you can touch instead of using the volume rocker, and works really well, works fine. So the big kind of question was how it was released, and I'm not sure I have a right or wrong answer to this. It's a really interesting argument. So you can download it through ROM Manager as an in-app purchase. What is it? $2, $3, forget what.
Yeah, $1.99.
Or you can download it yourself from the website and then, you know, fast boot flash it. You know, real simple, takes 30 seconds to do. So we're back to that same old question again. It's $2, I guess. Is it double dipping to offer it up for sale that way? On the other hand, are you paying a developer for work, you know, for the work that they've done, which you absolutely should do? I don't know. Paul, where do you I don't think I saw you answer that. I saw you ask the question a couple times.
Well, you know, when you buy, I mean, in this particular instance, I think when you buy ROM Manager, what you're buying is ROM Manager. You know, no one's coming into it with an expectation that they're buying Touch Recovery.
Right.
And I think the, you know, people having an issue with paying for it is pretty well negated, not least by the fact that, you know, you can go to your PC, you can type four words on your console and press enter, and then you flash it manually. You know, if you want the convenience of flashing it via ROM Manager, you know, you pay for that. I mean, a lot of the kind of issues with it and a lot of people, you know, having problems with it, you know, comes back to the basic problem that people kind of don't like paying for stuff on Android or paying for stuff, paying for developers to do stuff. There's a general expectation that everything should be free. But, you know, I don't personally have a problem with Kush charging for Touch Recovery. Yeah, it's fine.
And let's not forget the, yeah, if you want to use regular Clockwork Mod, that's still free. You can still install that. It's, yeah, if you want the added convenience of being able to use the touchscreen, then you can, you know, and you want to do it with one click, then you can pay an extra couple of, you know, dollars or whatever and pay for the convenience and support the developer at the same time. And I have no problem with that.
Well, I think there's a basic... People have to understand that if someone works on something and gives their valuable time and their valuable expertise and everything else to creating a product, whatever it be, whether there's a free version or not, they're fully entitled to charge for it. And if you want to buy it, you buy it and you enjoy it. And if you have a problem with the price of developers charging for it, you don't buy it and you either create your own or you go and use something else created by someone else. You know, it's pretty simple economics.
And in this case in particular, if you root your phone and use custom recovery and ROMs, you need to be thanking Kush anyway. Let's be honest. Right. I don't use touch-based recovery. I don't like it. I like having to confirm every little choice. I still gave him the $2. He deserves the $2. Mm. We're just too tight with our money. It's $2. You'll go spend $4 on a latte. Shut up. Make your own coffee one morning and give the man his $2.
I guess that answers that, and you guys are going to yell at me because I still am using an unrooted Galaxy Nexus.
Hey, I'm using an unrooted Galaxy Nexus.
Yeah, there you go. God, we're so square. Alex and I are not cool. I'm looking at the live window here. We have a cool side of the window and the lame side of the window. And
yeah, Alex, I'm afraid you're officially demoted as a nerd now. Sorry.
Man. Oh, what else? Anything else going on? I'm just kind of looking through all the links. Paul, you want to start talking about NFC a little bit? You put up a great post this morning on kind of your experience, because I think you're in the same boat as everybody else. It's like, hey, it's awesome. It's great. It's here. Now, what the hell do I do with it?
Yeah, so when I first got my Galaxy Nexus, obviously, you know, started tinkering around with it. And one of the things that was pretty cool was putting Google Wallet on it. There was a hacked build that you could flash onto the device and activate, and then you get $10 free from Google, which you can use in the UK as well. So obviously I went down to the local Baker's and brought a coffee and kind of did a NFC payment and got that courtesy. I think I got 2 bacon rolls and 2 coffees paid for by Google, which was quite nice. But unfortunately in the UK, there's no way of then topping up that prepay card with any more money. So kind of, okay, what do I do with NFC now? Mm-hmm. So what I did was buy some tags, some blank tags. And what I'm doing now is trying to find ways to use those to kind of simplify things. So I put one in the car on the phone mount. So when I put it in the phone mount, it turns on Bluetooth. I've got one on the bedside table. So when I put my phone down, it kind of switches it to a night profile. But I'm kind of inviting people on the site to talk about how they use NFC and, you know, ways that we might be able to exploit this kind of new technology that's a bit wasted at the moment. I don't know if any of you guys have really done anything with NFC, but it's kind of been this great promise of a fantastic technology that will revolutionize our lives that's just kind of never really cut it as yet.
Is it really going to take the iPhone to make it popular? I mean, yeah, we've seen posts about that this week. I mean, I think anything that the iPhone hops on is going to, you know, obviously grow, but is that what it's going to take?
It might be, and I think we've heard that... Oops, gone. I think I'm just interrupting someone there.
Sorry, I think, you know, what NFC is really going to be great for is mobile payments and things like travel cards, that kind of stuff. And until there's kind of real proper buy-in from people like Visa and MasterCard and the big transportation systems, then it will just kind of be a toy for the nerdy side of the window, won't it?
I mean, I think if the iPhone does get it, it's going to be a big boost for NFC. And we've heard that the Olympics is going to be... You know, Google Wallet maybe is going to be part of that as well. I'm not sure if there's much truth in that. But I think even on the Android side now, which is where you see a lot of sort of new emerging technologies, there's still only a handful of the current flagship Android phones that have NFC. So I think it has quite a distance to go just yet.
Yeah, I think Sony's new range, they're basically putting NFC in pretty much everything. So that will kind of increase the penetration. And Samsung have a NFC-enabled Galaxy S2 on Orange over here. So Orange as a network are kind of trying to pimp NFC. But, I just don't see what's going to be, you know, that real driver towards critical mass where you kind of see NFC all over the place.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when Apple does it, it'll be revolutionary, magical, and everybody will want
it. I think it was at CES, maybe at some party or something, where somebody's like, hey, you know, give me your contact information over NFC, and I hadn't tried it before, and it's the most uncomfortable thing when you're doing it with somebody else, because like you find another phone, you know, because we have these 2 giant-ass phones, and like I'm trying to put mine on there, or they're trying to put theirs on mine, but I have to see the screen and I can't tell which is which. By the way, that's the Droid Razor Max right here, if you want to see how thick it is, and the GSM Nexus with the extended battery aside. I mean, it's awkward and weird, and it almost makes me wish for like old school Trio beaming, you know?
Infrared, that's what we need. Yes. Bring back infrared.
Exactly. Bring back the little window and we'll zap each other's eyeballs out or something. It's, you know, NFC's going to hit at some point, I think. I don't know, QR codes took a long time over here too.
QR codes never really took off here, you know.
No,
you see
not really.
Occasionally on adverts, but people don't know what to do with them, and you have to run an app, and then you have to point it and take a picture, and you know, it takes just as long as typing in a web address anyway. So,
And for advertising, people are familiar with URLs, you might as well just use those.
Yep.
What else? I want to talk about end of life for a minute. We've seen a couple stories come out, you know, with all these T-Mobile phones that are supposed to be EOL'd, and then another one came back and said, well, all right, well, hang on, they're not actually end of life. And everybody freaks out when these stories come out. They're like, oh my God, it's only a year old, or in some cases, not even a year old. And I will be the first to say that some phones deserve to be shot and put out of their misery within, you know, 6 months, some within 6 weeks. But I think there's a misunderstanding about what EOL actually means. And I know we kind of say this every time, but nobody's going to take your phone away from you. It doesn't mean your phone's going to quit working on that date. I mean, it's being phased out, right? I mean, in the simplest form of it. And it could well mean your phone sucks. I'm sorry. But it means your phone's being phased out.
As you say, in reality, you know, it doesn't mean, you know, it might mean your phone's not likely to get updates, but in reality, your phone probably wasn't going to get any timely updates anyway, depending on who you bought it from. So it doesn't really make a massive amount of difference, does it?
So the interesting thing for me was that the one that was actually confirmed as being EOL'd was the Amaze, which is one of the most recent ones that's come out of T-Mobile. Yep. It's a sort of tarted up version of the Sensation. And I haven't used one. I think, Phil, you have. Does anyone have any theories about why that might be?
New phone coming, I think, would be probably.
Oh. And yeah, they're keeping the Sensation
exclusive.
Around. That seems a bit strange.
Phil Nickinson says new phone coming.
No, I don't. I don't know. It's. Look, and I actually started writing something on this and deleted it. Didn't mean to. But the other thing you have to remember is context. We're not supposed to see these sheets. We're not even supposed to know the phone has been end-of-lifed, right? And that's kind of important. Like, leaks are fun. They're good. They're important. You know, we do leaks like everybody else does. But we're not supposed to see this stuff. The public isn't supposed to see it. So it's a really odd occurrence when a company tells you that this phone is being phased out. In fact, really the only one I can remember that ever happening with is the original Nexus One. Where Google said, you know what, we're not selling it anymore. You know, we're still going to support it, whatever, but it's being phased out. And I can't remember if that was before or after the Galaxy S. I'm sure it was after. It must have been after. But, in fact, it might have been... No, we just hit 2 years, didn't we? But, I mean, in most cases, you're never going to know about this if it weren't for the leaks.
Well, and there's the other side, too. End of life means they're not making any new ones.
Right.
Maybe a... T-Mobile warehouses, they have 5 million Amaze 4Gs on the shelves.
The Logitech View would be another example, actually.
A lot of people on T-Mobile would have snapped up the Sensation when it first came out, and they're not going to be in the market to just go out 4 months later and get an Amaze. So maybe you're right, Jerry. Maybe they just have lots of spare stock.
I'm so pissed about this Droid Razr Max thing. It's a great phone, except for the screen. And I'm not sure if I gave the screen a pass when I've reviewed the original one, and I might well have. I might just not have been too hard on it. Or if it's that big a difference going back from a 720p screen to this, you know, the display. But it's ridiculous that they put this thing out 3 months after the first one with a proper battery. You know, thickness, or more accurately, thinness is not everything. I mean, it's a lot. But to say that you have the thinnest phone when it's not actually the thinnest phone.
Yeah, but if you're going to resurrect the Razr name, you know, they had to make it an ultra-thin phone, didn't they? So they had to do the regular version before the Max. I mean, I guess what they should have done with hindsight is kind of announce the Max at the same time as the super-thin one and give consumers the choice. But I think overall, you know, although it's a pretty crappy thing to do to existing customers, I would applaud Motorola for actually producing a phone with a 3,300 milliamp hour battery. That's pretty sweet.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, this thing, it'll sit on your desk unused for days. I've gotten days out of it. And actually, that's something I really test here with LTE, because especially if the signal starts bouncing around, right, it'll just die overnight. The Thunderbolt was just a huge offender at that. If you didn't plug it in overnight, it would be dead in the morning, and that's no good. And I think that's a really real-world use case, right? You come home, you forget to plug your phone in at night, and if it has half a day of juice afterwards, that's awesome. This thing can probably get you through a whole second day. Really is nice. I like that. But, oh, the display. Once you go 720p, it's tough.
So here's a question for you, Phil. You've had the extended battery on the GeneX now, the GSM one, and you've had the Droid Razr Max at the same time. And how's that compare for you?
Yeah, are you talking battery life, or which one do I like better?
Just battery life, because, I mean, obviously on one you don't have NFC, but is the difference between NFC and no? Yeah, does NFC make that big a difference to the point where you need this giant battery just to get comparison battery life?
Well, I mean, I'm not using NFC all the time.
Sorry, LTE, not NFC.
Yeah. Oh, LTE? LTE, I mean, look, when you're using LTE, it'll suck through a battery. And I think, Yeah, I've seen all these posts where people are trying to get this magical battery life out of the Droid Razer Max, and that's fine, and it's fun. But look, the damn thing has a bigger battery than anything else out there. You're going to get better battery life. You're going to get longer use when you're using it. You're going to get longer standby times, period. This isn't some, like, magical fix that they've done. You know, it's not some new battery technology. You're just adding more juice to it. It's more capacity. It's more milliamp hours. So it's not changing the way you use your phone. And I think if I had my druthers, I would rather have a removable battery. I think it's better design. Maybe not better design, but it's better options.
Yeah, the extended battery on the Galaxy Nexus is pretty interesting. I'm running it as well. It only boosts it from like a 1750 to a 2000 milliamp hour. So it's, you know, calling it an extended battery is a bit over the top. It's more like a case reshaping device, you know, to make it feel a bit different in your hand, you know.
Do you think it feels better?
Yeah, I do actually. I like it actually. Yeah, it's good.
We talked about this. Yeah, we were talking about this last week, and I think every single person that I've seen or spoken to using it, it seems they seem to think it's a much easier to hold just based on the fact that it's got this extra little bit of thickness to it.
Yeah, what's kind of strange is when I first put it on, I thought, oh wow, it makes the device like so much heavier, you know. Mm-hmm. But then I put it on the scales, and it was like 6 grams or something. So it's completely a perception thing about the way it feels in your hand. It's really interesting.
It's just like the Verizon version, I think. I don't have the Verizon one here anymore to really see them side by side, but if I remember right, it feels almost exactly the same. And what's interesting is you can use the stock battery with the extended battery cover, and it seems to work just fine for me. It's not rattling around or anything, which is nice. So that means I can carry around the second battery to shows and stuff and not have to carry around the second battery cover, which is a pain. Not a huge pain, a first world problem. But
do you think we'll see other manufacturers following Motorola's lead and putting, you know, monster batteries in thin devices?
Trying to think. All right, so what's the Note? Because the Note's a big ass device.
It's 2500 in the Note. I think. Let me check.
Yeah, I think that rings a bell. But you know,
It's 2500.
You know, what the hell were they going to do with all that space behind the screen otherwise?
Right. Sure. Mm. I mean, I think we really need some sort thin. Of seismic shift in battery technology. And I don't know what it's going to be. I'm not an engineer. But, I mean, something's got to change or the way that power consumption is done. I don't know. I mean, radios are going to take power, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be radio technology and it's going to be chips. It's going to be the efficiency of those things rather than any kind of revolutionary battery development.
Well, isn't there these new technologies coming out that can completely charge a battery inside 10 minutes and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I've heard of that, and it's still that's still, I think, at the experimental stage, isn't it? I know we've had the Xperia X, which apparently that charges about 10% faster, but we've yet to see the, you know, the crazy high end of that where it's a full charge out of 10 minutes.
Our kids are going to be like, you had what? The battery lasted maybe a day? You're lame,
Dad. No, they'll be like, we only get 2 hours out of our devices now.
Our kids aren't going to recharge their devices. They're going to recharge themselves. Ooh, sweet. My Samsung Galaxy Tab 7.0 Plus just shipped.
What about the you're not getting a 7.7?
This one was $400 on sale today on Amazon, so.
Ooh, nice.
We'll give it away. Yeah, you heard it here first. Giving it away after I play with it, because that's how we roll.
Soiled goods, sorry.
I wash my hands first. What else is going on? We got more Mobile World Congress stuff coming up. Anybody? Let's talk about that leak render that Eldar posted today.
Eldar, yeah.
Murtazin, if you guys don't know him, you know, has been leaking smartphones since they existed, right? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. So what we saw today looks like a Samsung phone. Very much, you know, at least in this picture, has ice cream sandwich on it. Very much has Samsung widgets on it. Go read the post I wrote. It's got ice cream sandwich widgets. It's got parts of ICS, you know, in the dock. But it's got some old icons from older versions of the Android market. And I don't know. Alex found that it looks almost exactly like the render of the T-Mobile UK Galaxy S2.
And you can line them up right next to each other, and it's, you know, the camera's in the same place, the light sensor's in the same place. To me, this is a fake. I don't think, I mean, it's that, and there's the fact that there are so many little things wrong with it as well. There's a calendar notification for an event that is non-existent. There's a date for some time in April a couple of years back. The thing at the top, the notification bar, isn't the same as we've seen earlier TouchWiz ICS builds. The thing down at the bottom, you've got touch, you know, like you said in your post, Phil, you've got touch, what looks like virtual buttons, but which aren't virtual buttons, so you wouldn't be able to have a menu button at the side. There's all these little things, and I think this isn't going to be what we see in a few weeks' time.
Or is it just a lazy render?
That's the other possibility, that it could just be a lazy internal Photoshop that they put together saying, okay, this is what we want to create. In which case, yeah, that's a possibility.
Have we seen a Galaxy Z yet? Because I think we've seen every other letter. Maybe that's the Galaxy Z.
Yeah.
I think I'm pretty sure there is a Galaxy Z already.
Yeah, there
oh,
is.
Oh, Lord. So this is the Galaxy double A.
Yeah, there's definitely a W and a Y. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, Galaxy Z was it was on 3 in Sweden, 4.2-inch LCD.
That was the Tegra device, wasn't it? Is that right?
Yes, yeah, it was. It was going to be called the Galaxy R, and they changed the name, yeah.
Right.
Or the other way around, I forget.
Samsung's naming scheme has just gone crazy, isn't it?
It's horrible. It's
ridiculous. They're they got too many phones. They need to stop it, like HTC seems to be doing now.
So yeah, we're not going to Galaxy 3 in Barcelona. Yawn. Sigh. I mean, look, we didn't see Galaxy S1 in Barcelona. The only reason people thought we were going to see this one is because the second one was there.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think Samsung has a massive need to kind of show the 3 in Barcelona. I'll be a bit disappointed if they do bump the specs on a S2 and make a S2 Plus, you know. They're just banging out so many phones like the Galaxy S Advance, you know, completely unnecessary. It's a bit,
and you just know that thing's never going to get updated. You get ICS if you're lucky. Beyond that, you're probably not going to see anything.
Man, I know I've been maybe leaning on the side of a Samsung apologist when it comes to updates, because I do appreciate that this stuff is difficult, and when you have that many damn phones, it gets exponentially more difficult.
But they bring it on themselves by having so many Samsung phones.
Yeah, I've got the Infuse here, which is finally getting gingerbread, maybe. Because, well, first off, AT&T announced the update, and then it still wasn't ready for another day. Oops. But then you have to update the damn thing via Keys Mini. I hate keys with a passion. Android has this beautiful update mechanism that I understand costs time and money to use, I'm sure. But Keys is like the completely wrong direction to go. It is so awful. And I can't even do it. I know it's there. Keep saying I have an unregistered device, and you know I have 5,000 devices here, and maybe that's the problem. Why can I not just update this thing?
Yeah. Sorry, Karen.
If you want to make PC software that allows you to update and administer your phones, you need to realize that in many areas of the world, people don't use Windows. Sold in India, there's not a lot of Windows computers there, you know, in the general population. So that's my biggest thing against it. Other than that, I like being able to update from the PC, but not a Windows PC.
I don't mind being able to, I mean, go back to the old school days of HTC, and again, back to, you know, we got Paul here, back to the old days of Windows Mobile, and everything through HTC was done through the RUUs, and all the custom stuff was able to be done through the RUUs. It was awesome, and it was simple. I miss those days.
Yeah, they were Windows only, though, remember, the RUUs, so...
Were they? Okay. So same problem.
I mean, they still use those on Android devices, but yeah, I'm quite surprised that, you know, someone as big as HTC hasn't really come up with a satisfactory Mac client or Linux client still.
A lot of manufacturers are kind of behind on that front. I mean, we just saw Sony Ericsson this week release a version of their Mac synchronization thing, and just now they're adding the ability to update the OS through a Mac. So it is a bit surprising that we've not seen more of that from Android people.
Am I just being too sensitive about it?
I think Phil, you should use LG's PC software, and then you'll know true pain.
Unpleasant. Well, at least on the flip side, you know, you don't really have to use LG's software because they never really push any updates. So
it's okay.
Man. What else? We're going to wrap it up. I don't have any big emails or voicemails lined up. Whole bunch of updates. So we mentioned the Infuse. Evo Shift 4G just got one. Somebody just sent an email. I think the Razer's getting one right now to 236. The Casio Jizz 1 Commando got one. If that phone gets updated, they all should get updated. Chrome to phone updated. Google Docs, you can now work offline, which is awesome. That's really good. Mint had a big update. Firefox 10. Anybody here use Firefox full time at all?
I do. I think I use it on my tablet.
Every time it comes out, I kind of put it on, and it's just so slow that I kind of take it straight off again. So the promise, you know, they're promising a UI update to a proper native UI in the next release, I think. So fingers crossed.
Has it got to the point now, do you think, with ICS where they need to just abandon the idea of having their own renderer on there, you know, of having Gecko on there, and should they just use what's shipping ICS?
No, because Gecko will render our post editor. I can lay in bed with my tablet.
I keep Opera installed on my device purely for the times when you load something up in the on-device browser and it doesn't want to play. But talking about browsers, you know, there was a lot of rumors of Google bringing Chrome proper to Android, wasn't it? And that kind of hasn't happened yet. That'd be quite sweet if that does finally materialize.
Alex, by the way, you gained back a couple nerd points for that.
What, for calling it Gecko?
For knowing Gecko, and B, for talking about the ICS rendering engine. So cool. I am now alone on the lame side of the nerd screen here. Sigh. Was that going to do it, I guess? Nice quick little podcast in the middle of the day. It's so weird podcasting in the middle of the day. Sober.
Well, unless you want to touch about our new, you know, supreme leader of BlackBerry and his new
All right, I guess we got to mention this. So we are in Mobile Nations Fitness Month, which we have kicked off. And if you haven't seen Crackberry Kevin's little sexy and he knows it workout video, you must watch it. And just make sure nobody's watching you watch it. And make sure you haven't eaten. Make sure there are no small children in the room. And pets, I'd keep pets out too. Because, yeah, just watch it. And I guess I did a rebuttal last night, if you haven't seen it. But so what we're going to do, we're kind of still hashing this out as we go. And I cheated. I started, look, I mean, I'm not in the best shape of my life. I used to be skinny. And, you know, then I started working and had knee surgery. And so I've started walking for the first time in I don't know how long. So I've been doing like 3 miles a day. And so I'm using Endomondo to track it on the phone. And then we're all using Fitbit, the little, you know, here in my pocket, actually, little pedometer. To track how many steps you do, and they actually talk to each other, which is nice. So Endomondo will talk to Fitbit and tell it how I've been exercising, and then we can all compete and see each other. So still kind of working out exactly how we're going to like kind of publicize all this. I've got stuff on the forums, and we'll have blog posts up, and we'll be giving stuff away as well, so look for that. Like I just mentioned, I've got one tablet on the way. I've got another here to give away, so we've got all sorts of stuff and accessories and fun times, so keep an eye out for that. Jerry,
can we have a section of the fitness challenge for the 16-ounce deadlift at a time? Because I'm on board for that.
To the fridge and back?
Yes.
I feel good. I'm enjoying it. And I've never really like tried exercising with a phone in my pocket before, and granted, I'm not like running, you know, miles at a time or anything. But it's not as bad as I thought. I mean, the phone's just sitting there. I don't have it like strapped to my arm or anything. It's just in my pocket. I'm using these headphones. The app works well. It's kind of cool to be able to see where I went, even though I know exactly where I went. I had to turn that off. You know, it uses Google Maps to show you exactly where your path was, and I had to turn that off to, you know, people I don't know, because I start at my house and end at my house, and you don't need to know where my house is. Well, not you guys. I like you guys, but all you guys at home, don't trust you at all. Nope. so it's fun. It's cool. And yes, we picked the shortest month of the year to do it, and yes, the last week we're going to be in Spain. So, kind of did a cop out. Anything else in Spain we're looking forward to? I know we're 3 weeks out. We talk about it every week, but
do you think HTC will kind of turn it around with an ultra slim phone and their new version of Sense and Ice Cream Sandwich and 720 resolution and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I mean HTC already has 720, right? They have that in the Resound.
Yeah.
Not in Europe. They don't in Europe. Yeah.
I think what they're going to do. I mean, you need to remember what they did last year, and they like having their own events for these things. They like throwing big events for all their phones. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what they've done since the middle of last year, for anything that's not a mid-range device, for anything that matters to them in the long run, they've thrown a big event in London for it. So I'm guessing that's what we'll see maybe a couple of months after MWC. We'll get a big new HTC phone. I think the thing that leaked this week, which was the Ville, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We need to talk about that.
That is what we'll probably see at MWC, and this big quad core thing that's been rumored for a while will probably be coming out, I guess, a couple of months later.
Do you think there's a danger with that, though, that everyone will see HTC release this kind of okay but not amazing device and kind of think that's their big thing? And
I don't know. I'll be back on here yelling and writing and being like, yeah, it's not the only event of the year.
The same thing happened last year. We had the Desire S, the Incredible S, and I think that was it. And everyone was asking where the dual core stuff was, and then a month and a half later it arrived. So I don't think there's really any big danger of that.
I'm more interested in the sense, I think. And that's my big question for 2012 is what these manufacturers do to kind of keep their own identities. And, HTC uses the word holistic a lot if you go to these events, and how they keep HTC Sense and the HTC look and feel and identity in Ice Cream Sandwich, which is very awesome to begin with, and I enjoy very much. And I want to see them do that. We saw a little bit in that video that came with the Ville, and, it doesn't look horrible. Maybe. We'll see.
I don't know. People like to complain about Sense. I don't know why. People buy Sense phones and they complain it has Sense on it. I think it looks good. And I think the way they seem to be taking it in Sense 4, where it's a little bit more basic, a little bit more geometric, I think that's going to be a good fit for ICS.
Yeah, I agree. But I think, it really is time that the manufacturers gave us the option to turn off their custom UIs, isn't it, and go back to proper vanilla ice cream sandwich.
Phil, I'll let you take that one. I know you love answering that question.
You know my answer. Well, but I'm also not going to talk against Paul here because dude knows what he's talking about. I mean, is Sense really just a UI, or is it an entire framework built from the ground up?
Well, as far as I can tell, there's no real technical reason why HTC or LG or Samsung couldn't say, you go into settings, you get a big list of stuff. Which contacts app do you want to use? I want to use standard Samsung. Which launcher do you want to use? I want the standard one, or I want the manufacturer one. I think particularly with the advent of Ice Cream Sandwich, the base operating system is good enough for people to have that desire to switch between the heavily customized cartoony whatever manufacturer skin and proper vanilla Android.
Well, so that's what I've done on HDR on Samsung phones, right? I've just used ADW on top of it and go about my business. So that's, instead of having the option to turn it off, I have the option to put something else on.
Yeah, but that only goes so far, doesn't it? You can change the launcher for one that kind of looks like the standard launcher, but, the People app, the phone app, there's a whole bunch of stuff, even just the UI. I don't want green HTC icons at the top of the screen. I want blue Ice Cream Sandwich ones,
Or
I think the answer always has to go back. Gone.
HTC has gone the other route, and they're unlocking bootloaders now.
The answer, I think, it always has to go back to if that's what you want. I think that's something you need to take into consideration when you buy the phone, not when you've already got it in your hands. That's just the way I think about these things.
Yeah, but it's unlock bootloaders are all very well and good, but there's no point unlocking bootloaders if there's nothing for people to then do with the unlock bootloader. Why force people down the custom ROM and hack together experience when you could quite easily enable a proper supported and reliable stock ROM with stock Android look?
What do you guys think? I've been thinking about this more, especially after the bad leak this morning, and the three button scheme that people are going to the LG Spectrum, the Optimus LTE has done that. If this leak Samsung phone pans out, know, it only has three buttons. The Ville only has three buttons. I think I know where Paul lands on missing the menu button, because that was one of the first things you hacked back into it, right?
Yeah, I'm less bothered about the menu button actually than losing the search button. I use that all really? The time, and when I go back to a stock Nexus without the hacked in the search button, it drives me crazy.
Do you think maybe we're going to see that eventually phased out in more apps? Because if you look at a lot of the phones coming out this year, they're three buttoned, and if you're building an Android app now, are you going to want to go to the trouble of including search button functionality in there?
Well, the thing is, you know, you'll still be having search functionality in your app. So if your app's going to be running on devices that might have a search button, it's a no-brainer to kind of map that button, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I suppose it's not a huge amount of work, is it?
But, yeah, it is nice on the Galaxy Nexus, particularly having a menu button down the bottom and on both sides that I've got in my hack, purely because the screen's so big that, you know, I don't always find it comfortable reaching to the top of the screen to the action bar to kind of pop up that menu.
I'll buy that. Jerry, where do you fall on those?
Actually, before I dropped my Nexus S in the toilet, I preferred using ice cream sandwich on it because it had the buttons in the same place every time where I like them. I thought I'd get used to it, but chasing those three dots around and then having them somewhere where I have to reposition the phone to reach them, I'm just not feeling it.
Well, the user interface for me doesn't feel consistent enough either. That some apps, like if you're in Gmail and you want the menu, you can't hit the bottom corners. You have to go to the top, you know. But you know, other apps, it's down in the right hand corner or wherever it is in stock. But yeah, it's just a bit inconsistent. It'd probably be okay once everyone's using the action bar, but you know, that's quite a long way away at the moment.
If the Galaxy Nexus had just had the four buttons at the very bottom of the bezel, I think it'd be the perfect phone. But moving away from that, I'm just not feeling it.
Remember once upon a time I said maybe the manufacturers would revolt and just not worry about the on-screen buttons, but looks like they've gone a totally different direction, haven't they?
Well,
I don't know. It's rumored, we still haven't seen any on-screen buttons, have we?
Yeah, it's rumored that HTC are going to stick with physical buttons, isn't it, rather than the on-screen ones.
So. Yeah, the prototype we saw this week was three buttons, so it's pretty clear that the way they're going.
Strange times indeed.
Yeah, I think a lot will become clearer at Mobile World Congress when we see a lot more ice cream sandwich devices and, you know, what customizations really are happening and, you know, what configurations the manufacturers are going for.
Right. Are you going to be there, Paul? Are you coming over?
I'm not this year, unfortunately, no. I'll be reporting from afar this year.
There's something to be said for that, too, I think.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. I guess we're going to wrap it up unless anybody else has anything. Going once? Going twice?
I think we're good.
Be sure to email us at podcast@androidcentral.com. We'll get back to your questions and voicemails next week, I promise. Find us all on Twitter, at Android Central for the main site. I am at Phil Nickinson. Jerry is at GB Hill. Alex is at Alex Dobie. Are you still on there a little bit, Alex?
Yeah, kind of now again.
Yeah? Okay. Paul is at Paul O'Brien. Be sure to follow him in Motoko and Motoko.com. We are all on Google Plus to some extent or another, so just search names because that's the easy way to do that. As we are every week, we are brought to you by the Android Central Store. You can get them at store.androidcentral.com or call 888-468-6158. Or you can leave us a voicemail at that same number, 888-468-6158, extension 222. That's it. Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Just a blast talking with you. I'm glad we finally did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was good.
Cool.
Definitely do it again. For everybody listening at home, thank you. Chat room, thank you. We'll be back live next Thursday night. We got a couple shows left before we head to Spain, so we'll make the most of them. So that's it. Thank you. See you next week.